going to kind of vary off of some politics. We've been talking politics for the past couple of weeks, and we're going to do it a little bit later on in the hour. But this morning, I'm like a sponge when it, I'm always reading stuff and stuff. I just soak up a whole lot of information. And I was running across an article about something that African-Americans, we talk about ourselves a lot, and sometimes they're just myths, and we'll take the myth and believe it's true. But we are now hearing that, was that $1.4 trillion, the African Americans' buying power right now? Well, a study by Nielsen and the National Newspaper Publishers Association projects that African Americans will have a buying power of $1.4 trillion by 2020. That's only 4 years away, and really, you know, there's a gentleman that's debunking that. And that gentleman is a professor at Morgan State University in out of Baltimore. We say good morning to Professor Jarrett Ball. How you doing, Professor?
As good as could be expected. It's a pleasure to be with you and your audience.
Yes, sir. You know, I'm glad you're with us this morning. And I was reading this article about the debunking of the myth of the black buying power. And before we get to the conversation, if this is actually true, that $1.4 trillion, sometimes I ask myself, what do we have to show for it? But you say the myth, there's a myth about that buying power. It's not really actually true.
Correct. The myth essentially that black people collectively have will have over $1 trillion of buying power is a contrived marketing phrase, mythology, that speaks to the so-called quote-unquote power of consumers to purchase what are strictly available goods.
Mm-hmm.
And that these numbers come from, ultimately, despite credit going to people like NNPA or as you said at the top there, the Nielsen study, or there was another similar study so-called by BET some years ago. All of these reports really, and this myth originates with the Selig Center for Economic Growth, which is based out of the Terry College of Business, which is housed in the Bank of America Financial Center in Athens, Georgia. And out of this report comes this phrase, buying power, which is really used by marketers and PR reps to help corporations and commercial business target advertising to segments of the community to try to capture their money for their market. But what ends up happening with the myth is that a lot of well-meaning people and some not so well-meaning people want to claim then that black people are poor because we foolishly and collectively are financially illiterate and spend wastefully rather than taking advantage of all that is supposed to be available to us in this wondrous American democratic capitalist society, mm-hmm. free market capitalist society. But that's just not the reality. So when you look behind the numbers and how this grand total of $1 trillion buying power is originated, you see the reality for black people is that we have very little money. We're underpaid, overworked, mm-hmm. underhired.
True.
First fired, last hired.
Right.
We are mass incarcerated, police brutality. We are, you know, undereducated. All of those things. Mm-hmm. And then what ends up happening as a result of the capitalist economy, which intends for there to be this reservoir of labor of poor people willing to take almost any job, you have, at the end of the day, the median black family, net worth being the highest number I've seen is $11,000. The lower number from research from Antonio Moore and others says it's about $1,700.
Now, compared to the white households, that's a small number.
Compared to the median net worth of white households, which is somewhere around $120,000,
$130,000.
Wow. You see that black people just don't have the kind of money that it would take to invest in stock and land and other so-called asset building products that would allow for black people to amass wealth that would be comparable to white or a stronger economic community. So what ends up happening is that we are told, even by, you know, somewhat comedic films like Chris Rock's documentary on hair,
right.
That because we spend so much money on hair or rims or gold or diamonds, that we are poor, and that's just not the truth. One, we don't have the kind of money that is claimed in the $1 trillion report,
okay.
And two, we are only buying what is available to us.
Mm.
If less than 1% of the population owns at least 30, and some studies show up to 50% of all the stock in the country, it means that there's no stock for people to purchase, and that's the nature of capitalism and the nature of wealth creation that you have. It's a zero sum game to an event because you are rich because there are poor, and if everyone is not poor, you know, a joke I used to make in my class
is that if
everybody if they lift the rope to the VIP
mm-hmm.
section of the club, we're all just in the club. The rope is put there to create an illusion of there being separateness, that without the rope, without most of the people being in the rest of the club, you can't have VIP. Without most of the people on the plane being in coach, mm-hmm. you can't have a first class.
Right.
So if everybody has the big seat and the fancy service, then we're all just on the plane. So to create a first class, you have to, out of necessity, make it worse for other people.
Right.
And that's how capitalism functions. So you can't have 1% having all this stock. You can't have five wealthiest white landowners in America having more land than all of Black America combined, and then still talk about the availability of land for purchase for the creation of more wealth or the purchase of business or the establishment of business. In other words, it doesn't work that way. So now when we're seeing with the Black Lives Matter movement or
mm-hmm,
the broader movement
right,
for
right.
Black Lives push and Killer Mike saying let's move money into Black
banks. I was going to get to that. We're talking to Jarrett Ball, Professor Jarrett Ball. He's a professor at the Morgan State University, one of those great historical Black colleges and universities that Wendy Williams wanted to diss the last week. But those Black colleges continue to exist. Now, there was one part that I was reading about Black African-Americans, whatever the name you want to use, credit card debt. The
right.
average credit card debt of African Americans is about $6,000, which means they say that the African Americans have an average credit card debt that's really worth more than the median family household worth.
Well, the net, it's a little more nuanced than that.
Okay.
But basically, I was trying to draw that stark contrast that yes, if in fact it is true mm-hmm. that black, the median net worth of a Black family is $11,000, which is a high number. It's probably closer to 7,000 or as low as 1,700 as Antonio Moore's research suggests. If that's the net wealth, that comes after the fact that the median Black family household also has a net credit card debt of almost $7,000. So what I was just trying to show there is that we can't be economically powerful, as people popularly understand the concept of power, and still have that kind of debt and that low amount of net family household worth. So you when you start to talk about this again, this notion of $1 trillion,
yes, a lot of money. Yes, sir.
These are now again, people can look at mixwhatilike.org. I have a lot of research there, all the numbers laid out. There are other interviews and conversations. People can even see me in a brief debate with the CEO of Industrial Bank here out here in Washington D.C., who unfortunately I think completely misunderstands this concept. But I want to just let people know that there is a lot of research and work behind what I'm quickly trying to summarize here.
Right.
But
right.
if we look at those kind of numbers, and then we look at how the $1 trillion number is created, it is a speculated, projected number based on small samples of survey data of Black people's spending habits at certain points of the year.
Let me stop
and
you now. I see this also applies to Blacks worldwide, not just in the United States. So 25 countries across the globe.
Well, this myth and this work is specific to Black America,
okay,
African
right.
America. So
okay.
It's not a worldwide.
All right, no problem.
Worldwide, this situation would be even worse
mm-hmm.
because collectively we are, relatively speaking, the strongest economically Black community in the world. But that's only because we live within the seat of empire.
Right.
We are closest to, you know, it's just proximity. It has, you know, almost nothing to do with anything else. But the the point I'm getting at is that this spending power concept, first of all, it confuses the concept of power. And when marketers and bankers, like those who create this myth, use the term power associated with buying and spending, but they're talking about the ability to create wealth for those who manufacture and sell the goods that we are buying. They're not talking about the economic strength of the consumer. And in capitalism, it's just basically understood, it's not the consumer that has the position of power relative to the producer and the owner of the means of production, as Karl Marx famously and accurately described. So we're talking about the power, quote unquote, for us to give money to the people who sell us what they decide is available to us. It is not power in the sense that we have all this money and can choose to buy or invest in any way we see fit.
Let me stop right there. Now, say the power, we do have monies. We're not as poor as some people say we are or think that we are. Some of us know that we do have, some of us have lots of money. Not big amount, large amounts of money, but when it comes to holiday shopping and all those kind of things, there's a lot of businesses that depend on that African-American dollar to make them successful, help them to be successful throughout at the end of the year, have their bottom line looking good. And we don't use it to our advantage, like applying for jobs, getting those jobs with those companies that we spend all that money with, all those black hair care products. You know, we know the Asians are now dealing with the majority of the black hair care products right now. There are quite a few, still some African-American businesses, beauty businesses across the country. And but we don't use that to our advantage, that power.
Well, there are a number of reasons for that. One, I don't agree with the description that we have a lot of money. There are a handful of black Americans that appear to do very well because they are high-paid employees of even more wealthy people. Most of us, as I said, are living on very meager means without access to really, who are shut out of the processes to really accumulate wealth. As are most working people, period. It's not like all white workers have access to the ability to create wealth in the same way either. There is this class element to this. So, but one of the problems that we have in terms of boycotts and marshaling our so-called buying power against those who are selling us these products is that, one, we're not sufficiently organized to do that. We're not sufficiently encouraged and taught politically how to do that through popular media and education. So there's a lot of work that has to happen to develop a whole set of reasons beyond just controlling hair care products, a political social movement. But it's also that we are consumers buying in small amounts individually scattered throughout the country as we accumulate a little bit of income. So that it again is not that we're sitting on $1 trillion and then have this organized method of disseminating that money to get what we want. It's poor working people buying things as things become available through, you know, a moment of having some money and a product being sold to them, and often through credit. So that's sort of the point about the credit card debt. A lot of what we're buying and how a lot of what we're having to spend, what we spend to get the things that we think we want or need is through credit.
Yeah, and credit can be
a problem.
Yep, credit's
high. It's been a general problem for all working people since the 1970s, because from 1970 through to today, relative to inflation, the average worker's salary has not increased at all. So, but we have produced more as workers, and we have made more money for those who own the products we're making and that they're selling. So they're making more money, but we aren't being paid enough to actually keep up with the purchasing of all the goods that we're helping create. So what do they do?
We try.
They create credit. They
right.
create credit to fill that void.
Deeper in debt.
Card. So we're not, so again, what we're spending and what is being called buying power is not actual wealth. It's not actual money we have. Mm-hmm. It's not actual access to again, the means of production that would then allow for us to have the kind of wealth that we think we're talking about or trying to achieve. And that's what I'm really just trying to use this myth to expose as much as I can and help others to do what they're doing to let people know that the game is, in fact, rigged, and we do need, in fact, to start behaving in very different ways politically, socially, economically, culturally, if we're going to address this situation. We have not had a successful revolution in this country yet.
Yeah,
and that's how we can see the persistent inequality that continues to come. And what this myth does, ultimately, this myth is used to blame poor people for being poor. And that's, for me, the most pernicious, vicious part of what the myth does. It convinces people that we are poor because we choose to spend ignorantly as if we had any other choice in the matter. And that's just an absolute, as I'm saying, myth.
But you use one word, use that buying power politically. That's something we have not done. We do not sometimes
we
think.
We can.
Hey, no. Dr. Jarrett Ball, professor at Morgan State University, the home of the Mighty Bears. And I'm quite sure that you're getting ready for class a couple of weeks now?
About to get geared up here in a couple of weeks.
You know, I'm glad you're able to come over this morning and talk about this black power, the myth of black power. There's another myth that goes on, and we spoke before you went on the air this morning, about the money that circulates in the African-American community. Some studies and research says the money in the African-American community circulates for 6 hours, white community 17 days, Jewish community 20 days, and Asian communities for a month. Is that actually true?
Well, I've seen the myth. Well, I've seen that said and repeated and regurgitated in a lot of spaces, but I have not seen the actual research that supports those numbers. Again, what I'm arguing is that I think that is similar to the myth I'm describing here, though I have not researched it in the same way.
Okay.
But it's again meant to suggest that because we don't have, this is similar to what the discussion I was having with the CEO of the Industrial Bank here in D.C., about black buying power. He made a similar argument about the circulation of money.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what I think is how that's associated with my argument is that we don't have money to circulate within the community. We don't have enough black businesses to sustain money circulating in our community. We don't own, black people don't own, cable and electricity and water and
cell phones and
we don't
things.
Own grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
We don't own healthcare. We don't, which is where a lot of our money ends up going.
True.
We don't own, and as his argument was that if we invested more in black banks, then black banks could invest more in black businesses, which then could hire more black people and pay black people more money, who could then reinvest, and the money would circulate. But as we see happening around the country, black banks struggle primarily because black people don't have money to invest in black banks.
And now, if they do, some folks just don't invest in black banks because they figure, as the old term, the grass is greener on the other side. But on the other side, those white banks are not, there's a lot of redlining going on.
But there's absolutely redlining. First of all, regardless of race, we see banks gobbling each other up as a product of capitalism anyway.
Right.
So the idea that black banks can compete in a capitalist economy with dominant white banks or dominant banks, period, is itself mythology. But what I'm arguing here, and why I think that my work on this buying power myth is relevant here, is because what I'm arguing at the end of the day is that we don't have money. If you took all of the money in black America and invested it all in black banks, those black banks would still not have the capital to create the kind of jobs and wealth that is necessary to sustain the 40 million black American population. For a number of reasons, not the least of which is that everything just by the role of white supremacy in this capitalist economy, just by the fact that you are black and investing in something, it devalues the investment. So even when we invest in housing, which is supposed to be a foundation of wealth creation, what ends up happening is the housing we've just invested in devalues. Not because we've invested, not because of the financial aspect of the investment, because of the racial aspect of the investment. So there is a rigged game here. And as I started off with a while ago, the consolidated ownership of stocks and land and wealth creating mechanisms, prevents even organized black capital from rivaling and getting in the game at a level that we think we're talking about. So what I'm trying to remind people is that despite the popular imagery, you know, Kwame Ture said a long time ago that black visibility is not black power. So that the imagery of black people in high political office or black people doing well on, you know, in entertainment or a few, you know, I think there are four black American billionaires now. The imagery of that belies the reality of how bad things are for the rest of us. The availability in popular media of people in my sort of professional class space of academics and journalists creates an illusion that there is some sort of progress happening for the collective. So when you look at the actual condition of black people collectively, we are worse off today, according to all these studies, including those that come from United for a Fair Economy, than we were in 1968. We are going backwards, or to the extent that in some areas we are improving, we're moving so slowly that it will take 500 years.
Hey, professor at Morgan State University, Jarrett Ball, we want to thank you for your time this morning and giving us your expertise on monies. And some of us may not have a lot of money, but we spend and we look good. $2,000 suits. And I would have loved to continue the conversation, but I got to move on. We didn't mention about all that money that's being put in black churches and the power they have, and they are putting money in banks and being able to maybe borrow the money from the same bank they put money in to get a roof on the church. But anyway, that's a topic for another day. And I want to thank you for your time, and good luck to the Mighty Bears there at Morgan State University. I think you all play North Carolina Central University, don't you?
I'm sure we will.
Yeah, I'm from the great city of Durham, North Carolina, North Carolina Central University, and we're ready for a fight this year.
Well, good luck to you, and thanks for the time.
Yes, sir.
You and all of your audience.
All right. Hey, thank you very much, Doctor. Professor.
Right, take care.
At the Morgan State University, one of the historical black colleges and university. I brought it up specifically because we always talk on the show about the power of the black dollar and us investing in each other. The amounts of money we have, and how whenever something comes out, we got to be the first one to get that brand new iPhone for $600. Yes, we have. Get one for my daughter, my wife, my four or five kids, and not been able to make the payment. Keep it up. But anyway, let me move on. We'll take a quick break and come back with some politics. And that's if you want to talk about a little money this morning. I thought I'd bring it up, M-O-N-E-Y, because we do spend a lot, and sometimes not among ourselves. But we'll find out what you have to talk about this morning and bring that back up after the break at 206-325-1420 and 206-329-7881.